It's a spin and a win for Max Verstappen, and yet again, Ferrari questionable strategy is dominating the headlines. Welcome back to Grid Talk Podcast. This is episode 220, where we'll be reviewing this year's Hungarian Grand Prix. I'm your host, Tom Horrocks, and today I'm joined by Philip Matthew from the Grip Trip Pod.
Hello.
Aaron Harper from Five Red Lights.
Hello.
And the world-famous Tom Downey from EF1.
Hello.
If you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you would give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll give you a shout out to everyone who leaves a comment on the next show. Just like Matthew Laurie 3 from America, who said, "This is my favorite F1 podcast and I love the panelists, but my favorite is Tom." Oh, thank you, Matthew. Oh, no, hang on. My favorite is Tom Downey. Okay, that's awkward. He asks for Tom Downey themed merchandise. So, well, Matthew, you are the winner of our merchandise contest this month. So if you want to email media@f1chronicle.com, you can claim your prize. And who knows, it may well be Tom Downey themed as well. You never know. And if you haven't done so already, why not subscribe to our YouTube channel and click the bell to be notified when we go live? We've got nearly 700 subscribers now, so we'd love it if we could top the 700 mark this weekend. There's loads of video content, including articles and shorts for you to get your teeth into as well. Give us a thumbs up, share, and comment, as we love hearing from you. And any questions asked during the stream, we will attempt to answer in our post show. But moving on to today, then, we've just come back from an enthralling Hungarian Grand Prix, and I'll start with you, Aaron. Max Verstappen, start of the race, was targeting a podium, and how surprised were you to see him passing Leclerc quite early in the race, considering?
We'll get to how he got there, but by the time it happened, I wasn't at all surprised, because we know just how quick that Red Bull is in a straight line. The more surprising thing was that he was in a position to actually challenge for the victory, because this wasn't a race where rain played a factor or there was a random safety car which brought certain drivers back into contention. Red Bull used strategy and pace to do this, and they were definitely out of position in 10th and 11th. No one can deny that. But it's still a very, very good victory for Max. It was just frustrating how easy it became in the end for him. That's not to do Max a disservice at all. I think Ferrari had the race in the palm of their hand, and yet Red Bull managed to snatch it away from them through good strategy, decisive strategy, and a driver who is in top form at the moment, because you give Max the sniff of a victory and he takes it like a ferret up a drainpipe, and there's just no stopping him at the moment, mostly because Ferrari keep falling over themselves. But, you know, you've got to be in it to win it, as they say. And Max is there. He's on hand. He's fast enough to do the damage when he needs to. I can't even say it's a save. It's just incredible that he's won this race from 10th on the grid around the Hungaroring, which I think speaks volumes, A, about the Red Bull package and Max as a driver, but also the 2022 regulations, because this track has always long been a tough track for overtaking. We saw it last year. Vettel couldn't get past Ocon. It took Hamilton an age to get past Alonso, who was driving the widest car known to man. And yet this year we saw lots of wheel-to-wheel battles throughout the field, and Verstappen overtook Leclerc twice on track, despite that spin, to go on and win the race, which I think, you know, shows you exactly how well he's driving and exactly how the regulations are affecting the on-track battling.
Yeah, it was an interesting strategy as well, to be able to undercut, to get into that position to then be able to attack, and a very good tyre-saving race from Max Verstappen, something that, although we know he can do, it's not something he's absolutely famed for. But someone who is famed for their great tyre-saving is the former world champion, Sir Lewis Hamilton. Great pace after that initial early stint, just getting his nose into the race. How was it that he was ahead of Russell on the podium, Phil? From Russell starting on pole and then for him beating him to second place, a hell of a performance from him.
It's the progression here over the last few weeks, Tom, for Lewis has been needed, of course. The start of the season was shocking. It was reminders of 2009. It was reminders of previous years where he wasn't at the front end meaning, you know, the consistency wasn't there. He didn't seem one with the car. The car wasn't doing anything that he wanted it to. They're going off on different planets to go and see if they can make the thing actually drive decently. But over these last five races, it seemed to have switched on. It hasn't all come together yet, of course, qualifying yesterday with the DRS issue, considering George qualifies on pole and how Ferrari did Ferrari things. It could have turned a little differently. It could have actually been a battle. We could have seen if the soon-to-be two-time world champion would have had a battle with Lewis there. But instead, strategy, they were able to put him on softs there late. And they did a two-stopper, and it worked in his favor. Car was fast. Not, of course, the top-end speed is not there, unfortunately. They need to have little errors, little things happen, like happened with Sainz. And it took a lap, extra lap, I think, in both cases to pass both of those cars, both Sainz and George, which basically cost Lewis any chance to really battle for the victory. But it was all consolidation at that point. Max had built the lead. He was at 10 seconds ahead for a good part of it. Even though he was giving up a second and a half, a second a lap, it didn't matter because he wasn't losing anything to the people behind him. The drive for Lewis today is positive energy, and he's in a great state of mind going into the break. Mercedes is in a good state of mind with two consecutive double podiums. They're in the mix to get second in the Constructors' Championship all of a sudden. I would also venture to say that the driver's second in the Drivers' Championship is still in play too. Lewis is only 32 points behind Charles Leclerc right now. So, and it's getting very tight amongst those five drivers. So that's the thing that we're going to be watching here with nine races to go, is that battle, the battle for second in the drivers and of course second in the constructors. And Lewis is going to have something to say about it, which is good to see, while Max goes on and wins this world championship and contends to get to those records, those Hamilton Schumacher records of the past, of winning all those races in one season.
Yeah, absolutely. And as well, the strategy he had today, I thought if Ferrari adopted that strategy, it would have been a 1-2 all day long. And there was absolutely no reason why they couldn't. They started on the same tyre. They have more pace than the Mercedes, yet somehow they've engineered the way to being behind both Mercedes, which is just, you know, it's completely opened up the Constructors' Championship. And George Russell is a big part of that Constructors' Championship battle, Tom. And great opening stint. But was the soft tyre the wrong tyre to start on in hindsight, or was it just Hamilton had too much for him?
I think hindsight is obviously a wonderful thing. It kind of meant that Russell was driving with one arm tied behind his back, so to speak. He did do a great job on those first stints. You know, I was just live tweeting for EF1 today. I put out a tweet and I said, can we just take a moment to appreciate how comfortable Russell looks leading a race? You know, he looks really comfortable, leading the race. And, that first stint, maybe the soft tires may sort of look like, you know, sort of perhaps look a bit better than it was, but he got a good launch. You know, he held his own going into turn one. He held off an early challenge from the Ferraris behind, and then unfortunately strategy didn't quite go his way. I think maybe he was a little bit hamstrung by starting on the softs, it just didn't quite work out for him. But I think for Russell's sake as well, I think maybe it's good that he didn't get his first win on the same time he got his first pole position, in the same way that when Lando got his first pole in Russia last year, he didn't get his first win. Because I think it's quite good from a driver development perspective as well, because obviously these guys are still very young. Russell is in one of the top seats. he will get a win at some point. We can all see it. I know it might sound weird, but for him not having the win just yet, I think that's good for him mentally and also in terms of his development, because he's now got experience of what it's like to lead a stint in a race. One thing that I didn't notice at the end though is I honestly don't know if Mercedes did team orders or not at the end. I didn't think they did because Russell was getting very, very sort of like, well, basically defensive when Hamilton was trying to overtake. But it was always respectful. Not just on Hamilton, but when he was battling against the Ferraris and anybody else, he's very, very hard, but he's pretty respectful on track, I'd say. So it's good to see him sort of genuinely fighting for positions, and that first win, it is going to come, it will come, and if Russell's career is anything to go by, he had his first points at Hungary last year, he had his first pole this year, next year first win for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's now ahead of Carlos Sainz in the World Championship as well. He's moved 2 points ahead of him right now, 158 to 156 from Carlos Sainz. And Carlos Sainz unable to pass Russell on softer tyres. It looked like a podium was the worst case scenario for him. Yet, fourth place for Sainz, Aaron. How did that even happen?
Well, he's driving in a Ferrari that's very fast, but is run by possibly the most inept strategy department you'll ever see. Because I think Sainz struggled in the first stint. He was behind Russell and Leclerc was asking for him to speed up, and then he eventually dropped behind. But for some reason, like, if you're going to put one of the cars on hards, surely it should have been Sainz, because he didn't have he had the longer run on the mediums in the middle, and yet they pitted Leclerc first. So I think Sainz was kind of inadvertently the guy on the right strategy at Ferrari, because that's what should have been used for Charles Leclerc. And then by definition, they should have both gone that way. He'll be disappointed not to have come away with a podium from starting on the front row. And he probably would have come to the track today thinking he had a shot at victory. But the Ferrari just didn't seem to be able to get past that Mercedes with much efficiency. And we saw how Leclerc struggled to get past Russell as well, which was kind of surprising. So for Carlos, it's a day of disappointment. He said the team, the pace was bad, so the strategy was always going to be difficult after the race. So he's kind of playing the team game there. But last week he said that the team shouldn't be criticised because everyone is at it with the strategies and stuff like that. So it's just a really disappointing result. And I think there's just an overbearing issue with Ferrari before we can really look at their drivers' performances. Because I think whatever they do, they're almost second-guessing their team. Because we heard last week Carlos battling with the team on the team radio as to whether to stop or not. They did something similar again today, although that was probably a bluff to make George Russell pit. And then, I mean, Sainz was hamstrung with that second stint, as I said before, because he was never going to have the pace to catch Verstappen or stop Hamilton closing it on him. And yet they put him on the soft tyres, and then he had no pace on there either. So it's just a very disappointing day for Carlos, and kind of sums Ferrari's day up, really, for me.
Yeah, and I just worry for Ferrari in that I can't see them keeping hold of certainly Charles Leclerc if this kind of behaviour continues. And I can see Sainz looking for an early exit, Leclerc looking for an early exit from his contract if they continue on in this manner. But Sergio Perez in the other Red Bull, and very much the other Red Bull this weekend, didn't really seem to have a lot of pace, Phil, and nowhere in the race was he really featured, apart from that first lap when he got ahead of Verstappen and then leapt out of the way like a child who just put their hand on a hob. He's definitely in that number two driver status right now.
Yeah, it's not unusual to see that happen for Sergio Perez. The fact that he has to get out of the way and he hasn't had pace the last two races, it kind of harkens back to other Red Bull second drivers over the years. The last 2 weeks have been really weird for him. I don't know what happened to his pace. I don't know why it's happening. He is battling for second in the Drivers' Championship. And considering how bad Ferrari are handling Charles Leclerc, the amount of points they've given up here in the last two races for Checo, it really makes no sense. How do you lose the car when the car has been so good for you? You in the month of May, he looked so fast winning at Monaco, and he's been good on it. And now all of a sudden it's gone away. And you've already signed him back for another year or two, whatever many years, to be the coffee boy. And the fact of the matter is you're kind of essentially making him that. You're making him into like Rubens Barrichello 2.0. And at the expense, because they don't care anymore, I guess now it's gotten to the point where they're so far ahead in the Constructors' Championship. Max has gotten over three race lead in the Drivers' Championship. They know it's good. Maybe it'll switch around here post-summer break, but it's really unfortunate. I think if he qualifies in the top 10, who knows, maybe he's battling for the – I mean, he would have finished second, sorry. I was like I was about to say he was going to battle for the win. I had to go and stop myself. Be the loyal domestique and finish second, but – They should want 1-2 in the Drivers' Championship at this point, because that's really what this is now. Max is going to win the championship. We already know it. It's just about how many wins he's going to have this year and how big of a gap it's going to be to second. You're going to win the Constructors' Championship because Ferrari figures out a way to screw up every single race. Mercedes doesn't have a consistent car yet. They have a very finicky piece. So when it gets there, they're going to go past Ferrari, but by that point, it won't matter. So you need to be going and working with your second driver and putting him up there. In fact, he gets, even in getting 11th, I mean, it goes back to what the guys have been saying. I mean, to go and be able to overtake at a track that has always been known as one of the hardest tracks to pass on to get a fifth place finish, strong result, solid result in that sense. I think there was more there. But he didn't have the pace, as you said, Tom. For whatever reason, these last two races, he's had no pace. And to give him credit relative to other drivers that have been in that seat, he's made the most of it, I guess, and brought about as good of a finish as you can get relative to being outside of the points or being like out in the woods. So I guess you can give him that.
Yeah, I mean, the theory behind Perez is that they've given him the updated floor, which is going to be legal come Spa, whereas currently it's the existing floor is illegal come Spa that Verstappen is driving, which would kind of make sense. I mean, it could just be a conspiracy theory there, but Charles Leclerc really looked like absolute nailed on to win the race, Tom, and fastest car leading the race, same strategy as the cars around him. How on earth was sixth place even on the radar today in a race that wasn't affected by rain and no safety cars? How did that even happen? More Ferrari bashing.
Yeah, that's quite an easy answer to this. It's called hashtag just Ferrari things. Once again, they donned their best clown makeup, sat on the strategy room and went, oh, how should we mess this up today, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, I know. Let's put Leclerc on hards. That went well. And then they went, oh, mamma mia, and then put him on softs with not enough laps to go. And then, yeah, it was just I can't say what I was about to say on the podcast, but, you know, I'm trying to keep it PG. Yeah, it was just an absolute show, is what I was going to say, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, it was, yeah, just... Ferrari All right, here we go. my God, a live fire can shoot the stars in my foot, can I? They don't know how to win. If you look at Mercedes today compared to Ferrari, Ferrari are like the new kids on the block, and they don't know how to win. You would think a team with as much history and as much prestige and success as they've had in the past, I know they haven't been as successful in recent years, you would think that they would still have at least some people there who would know what the hell they are doing. You know, because Binotto has been at that team. You know, there was a clip of Michael Schumacher doing, like a garage, like a pit garage, walk around with a microphone, and he found Binotto. He's channeling, he's in a Ted Kravitz. It's a clip that I saw the other day. So Binotto's been there a long time. They've got people who have been there a long time. That team is rotten to the core. It has a lot of dead wood that needs to be ripped out, put in the recycling, given to charity, whatever. Give them to Aston Martin. I don't care. I'm not even a Ferrari fan, and I'm getting annoyed for them. How can you squander such an opportunity? And before the Tifosi come and say, I know George was on pole, but you still had done him, and then Leclerc was an absolute sitting duck on those hard tyres. Even after Max got a bit too ambitious going into the final hairpin and spun, a handful of laps later, he just did exactly the same thing and he just went straight on by, which for me, great, because I'm a Max fan, we all know that. But the team doesn't know how to win. They're going to cost themselves second in the constructors pretty damn soon if they're not careful. Earlier in the season, and we were saying this yesterday on the quality review. You know, I think we said in the post show. So someone in the comments said, will Ferrari end up finishing third? And at the time, I said no. On the back of today, they're at serious risk of finishing third because Mercedes, as Phil and Aaron said, have come on leaps and bounds this year. Phil, you made a very, very good point about how sort of like Mercedes have come on. Yeah, they've got a lot of work to do still, but they are a hell of a lot better than they were earlier in the season. If Ferrari aren't careful, they're going to be consigned to third in the constructors, which if you look at how their season started, is inexcusable. It's not like they're new kids on the block either. They need to sort it out. That's easy to say, obviously, and we all know it's not going to be sorted out overnight. But a really good example was when it was at Silverstone when they were saying something to Sainz. I think it was when they're behind the safety car or the VSC towards the end, and Sainz said, "Stop inventing things." And then the other week of the French Grand Prix, when Sainz said, when one of them said stay out, the other one said come in. Sainz was saying he wanted to come in. They said stay out, and then when Sainz was mid bloody battle, they said, "Oh, come on in. Let's have some new tyres, boy, back, and let's get you back out there, son." It's just they're like a bunch of amateurs. This isn't an online game where they can press the flashback button or whatever. It's just an absolute.
Thoughts heavily echoed, I think, by the entire panel here today. And it's not as if they didn't have any evidence to say that the hard tyre was bad. We've just seen Kevin Magnussen and the Alpines just fall like an absolute stone having fitted those tyres. And unforgivable situation, really. But one driver who actually did kind of make those hard tyres work in the final stint, Lando Norris, the last driver on the lead lap. He's the only driver outside the top three teams to finish on the lead lap. Is seventh place where McLaren are? Aaron, is that kind of the best he could have hoped for today?
Yeah, that's where the McLaren probably would have ended up in a normal circumstance in qualifying, somewhere around there. The McLaren was good, especially in Lando's hands this weekend. Daniel had a good run as well until he had a coming together with Lance Stroll. But the important thing for McLaren was they had the edge over Alpine, and they got their strategy right. They started Lando on the softs. He made a good launch. And then they put him on the mediums and ran in really long. And basically, because Alpine had done a Ferrari with their strategy, they gave Lando this nice yawning chasm to pit and come back out in front of them. And the fact that Lando finished on the lead lap shows you just how well he was driving. He did lose a lot of, he lost a lot of pace early on when he was defending against Hamilton and Verstappen, and it was inevitable they would come past. But from there, he ran his own race. And when you're in the midfield, and especially the head of the midfield, if you can just manage your own race and not get tangled up in anybody else's, especially if there's faster cars out of position, just run your own race, do your pace, and everything will sort itself out. And he's got himself in a really nice position there. Seventh place doesn't seem like a lot, but considering that all of the top six cars finished the race, then the next best position on offer is P7. So if you're McLaren or Alpine, you've got to be looking at making sure you finish seventh at the bare minimum. And Lando Norris did that. So he's done exactly what's asked of him. And he admitted yesterday after qualifying that the car doesn't always drive how he wants it to drive in terms of style. So if he's admitting to that, his performances are even more impressive. And perhaps it sheds a little bit more light on Daniel Ricciardo's struggles if Lando Norris is admitting to those sort of struggles as well. So for him to beat both Alpines, fair play, well done, good job.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have helped in the constructors had the two Alpines not finished directly behind him, and the gap was completely negated, as they're still 4 points ahead, Phil. And going into the next driver there, Fernando Alonso, finishing eighth place. Never in his life has he ever seen defending like that from Esteban Ocon, allegedly. But he still managed to finish ahead of his teammate. How did that even happen with them and the strategy as well? But just a kind of a very odd race for Alpine when they looked like they had decent pace.
Yeah, well, the plan didn't seem to work out so well for him this year. It did last year when he made his vehicle into that Renault van they had back in 95 with the V10 engines that they let Alan Prost drive. And that's what he drove last year. Block Lewis Hamilton cost him a chance to win that race. In this case, he got it back. He got a little taste of his own medicine. That hard tire was a disaster for anybody that really put it on. For the midfield teams, of course, for both Alpines, they were able to salvage a result based on their pace and their car. Other teams were not as lucky. Esteban Ocon has been a little bit off here the last couple of two, three races. So I guess now he's a little punchy. He's like, hey, well, I know I'm back. I know I have the long-term contract. I'm going to give Valplan a little bit of a run because he knows that's where the battle is. He has to beat his teammate. When you have the lure, you have the heir of Oscar Piastri sitting there, albeit now with a certain legendary driver retiring, maybe that kind of takes a little pressure off. You know, you have to keep on driving hard. In Alonso's case, he had bad luck earlier in the year. Now it's kind of come around a little bit. His performances and his standing in the points see him 10th in points. He's only 5 points behind Bottas, and then he is 17 points now behind Ocon. And Ocon had a bit of a head start on him early in the year, too. So I think Esteban's kind of looking at it in that sense and saying, hey, I want to finish ahead of my two-time world champion teammate. Everyone talks about him. Everyone gives him all the credit in the world, blah, blah. That's the battle. I don't know if that's what Alonso was banking on when he signed up and said 2022 is our year, that I'd be battling my much younger teammate with a guy sitting over there as the test driver that probably could go as fast as either of those guys right now in that car too. So, I mean, you're consolidating, you're still ahead, getting that double points finish while Lando is the sole recipient for McLaren gives you a small edge in the constructor standings, which to be fair is what they're really racing for. At this point, fourth in the constructors, they are now 4 points. They are 4 points ahead in constructors going into the break. So, I mean, that is really what it is. And that was a best of the rest kind of scenario, which is where McLaren and Alpine are at the moment.
Yeah, going into the summer break, that's a good position to be in, especially as McLaren have actively said they're not developing any more updates. There'll still be a few things trickle through, and you know, Haas are a great example of what you can do just by understanding the package you have without bringing upgrades. So I'm not saying McLaren are done, but it's certainly a strong position to be in Tom. And Esteban Ocon next up, he's finishing ninth place after starting fifth. Is there anything that can really be said about Ocon's race? Because apart from that, that defence against Alonso on the opening lap and being passed by Daniel Ricciardo, we didn't really see much of him.
No, it was a bit anonymous for him. You know, that helped by the Alpine strategy. Alonso must have been on the horn to some of his engineers from his Ferrari days and said, no, look, fam, I need to mess up a strategy. How do I do it? And they said, oh, you'll go on the hards. And then that's exactly what they did. The only thing of note I'd say about Ocon was, you know, he's having a sort of good bit of a ding-dong with Alonso. And then Danny Rick did that lovely move from the outside of turn two into turn three to take both of them, which, yeah, I saw that move and I practically stood up and applauded at that point because that was good to see.
I did.
It was good to see. Good to see that. But with regards to Ocon, I gotta be honest, I didn't really notice an awful lot of him. You know, they just seem to be battling with the Alpines. The Alpines, bloody hell, Tom. Yeah, that's for me, not you. They seem to be battling with the McLarens week in, week out. And that's very much, you know, I think we can safely call that the battle for fourth at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. And obviously, we've already been alluded to. We've mentioned about Sebastian Vettel, very much on his farewell tour now for the end of the season. And Aaron, he got the pass done on Stroll towards the end of the race this time round, as opposed to last time, and without a single bit of contact as well. How do you see his performance today, and what do you expect to see from him in the second half of the season?
I think he was team ordered past Stroll, if I'm mistaken. I didn't hear any team radio about it, but that's what it looked like on the replay. But, you know, if you look at where Seb started, P18, and he's finished 10th on paper, that's a really good result. And it is a good result because that Aston Martin, sometimes it looks quick, sometimes it flatters to deceive. But today it had some decent pace, and even Stroll was doing all right until he had that coming together with Ricciardo. For Seb, moving forward, I think we'll just see that boyish grin come back. He'll just enjoy everything. I think he'll do the most he can for the team in terms of picking up points, but if there's a move to be made, a lunge to be had, I think we might see a few tasty overtakes from Seb coming forward. As for today, good result, an extra point. It's not really going to transform their season, but it's handy because, like I said before, there wasn't many point scoring positions up for grabs outside the top three teams. So for Aston Martin to pick one up, that's really useful. Really, really, really useful. And on a day where AlphaTauri didn't score, Alfa Romeo didn't score, Williams didn't sneak a point. Aston Martin were the team that got it. And they used, I'm guessing, good strategy. And they made sure they put the right driver in front to go and get that final point.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to see a happy Seb for the remainder of the season there. And his teammate, Lance Stroll, he started 14th, finished 11th in a race with only one retirement. Decent return. But again, the tangle with Daniel Ricciardo and being beaten by his teammate has kind of taken a bit of a shine off that. What's your thoughts on Lance Stroll today?
Well, at least he got out of the way of his better teammate and better driver. The fact of the matter is you would figure that you had the better position, he would have had optimal strategy, but, you know, it's Lance. I think at this point for Aston Martin, they're battling, I believe, for eighth in the Constructors' Championship. Let me just go and check that for a second. Ninth. Okay, so they're actually in a battle for eighth, have a possibility of seventh if the Haas upgrades do not work, per se, because they only had it on Magnussen's car. And just like the last time they put an upgrade on Magnussen's car or whatever, it didn't work at Silverstone, and it didn't seem to work this weekend either at Hungary. That might be in play, but they're not really going to be moving up to get the key points where they can make a massive move. Keeping it clean for him is essentially what it is. We don't know who's in play. I know that that's the ride that everybody's going to be talking about for the silly season. It's essentially the Sebastian Vettel's car and the second Williams seat. To be fair, they should be looking at two new drivers at Aston Martin if they ever really want to contend, but it'll never happen. Getting 11th place is whatever. Made it into Q2. It was close. I think Vettel had some issues in Q1, which meant he got held out there and missed out. We'll see what he brings to the table with the last 9 races of the season. Stroll, in a past life, has done well at Monza. In a past life, I think he's done okay at Singapore even. So we'll see what the Aston Martin team has to bring. They need to really pick it up anyway, relative to the teams that they're around and the budgets that those teams have. They have a way bigger budget, and they are not bringing the heat at all. And it's kind of unfortunate, to say the least. I think they were talking about somebody who's leaving after this race. I'm not sure how many years she had been with the team, but I'm sure that's going back to the Jordan days or however many guys as they were before that. So in between that. So we'll see what happens with old Lance. He'll get to go out on a yacht with his buddy Nicholas, and maybe he'll sail out to sea somewhere into the depths of despair.
Brilliant. And yeah, so Pierre Gasly finished 12th after starting at the back of the grid, and very much unseen by the cameras, Tom. And I think that a lot of that is down to the fact this was such an engaging race today, and it was very much a battle for the lead, and the top six was dominating proceedings. Nobody ever was really absolutely nailed on to win it. But is there anything we could really say about Gasly? Did you see anything that we didn't?
No, I didn't see a single thing of Gasly. But like you said, I think that's down to the battles we had for the race, and the sort of like upper echelon to the midfield, and also down to that absolutely shocking TV direction once again. That's actually a good result for Gasly. I know it might sound weird, but you know, given he had a woeful qualifying, yes, he had a lot of time deleted, but you know, started P19, that's pretty dire. So went for a pit lane starts, all the rest of it. I think that's a good result for him. I mean, he was probably helped a bit at the start by the double wave yellows in sectors two, I think it was sectors 2 and 3, and then obviously with the VSC. Yeah, so he was able to not catch up, but that gap was sort of negated a bit. A full safety car would have obviously helped him even more, because obviously he'd have just gone and just caught up. But yeah, but it still helps him a bit. I got to be honest, I don't know how he got to P12. I don't know if it was through on track overtakes, if it was through strategy, if it was through what. And I can't really see the way, mainly because all the stuff that we saw on the TV direction was obviously the battle for the lead, Ferrari imploding once again, and Mercedes and Red Bull doing well, and then the Alpine and McLaren battle. So, I mean, P12, given the season Gasly has had, I think that's a good result. So he can go away we've got best part of a month off now from F1. that's a good result for him. So he can go away, and like I've said on some of the other shows, he needs to go away and just have a few weeks off and switch off. Hopefully, this can be a bit of a catalyst for the start of something good or something better for him for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I think just as a bit of a primer to the listeners here, we I think pretty much everyone from here on in, apart from maybe Ricardo, there's not going to be an awful lot to talk about because of as I said, just what such an enthralling race it was up the front. But Zhou Guanyu, even next up for Alfa Romeo, and again as with anyone else, another fairly anonymous day. But again, he may have had the most exciting race in the world, but we just didn't see it on camera, Aaron. And I'm not the biggest supporter of Zhou Guanyu. I know a few people are very impressed with him. Some people, he's a very polarizing character. But for me, another 0 points haul. I know there wasn't a lot of points on offer today, but 13th place. We know his seat is safe for the rest of the season. Do you see him returning next year, or do you think he's under pressure?
No, I don't think he's under pressure because he delivers solid drives like this. You know, he's finished P13. On a day where not much was up for grabs in terms of points. So if you look at the ordering of the midfield, you've got Norris and then the two Alpines and the Aston Martins, who seem to be improved within race pace, although they struggled for qualifying pace. Gasly, yeah, you'd expect him to be up there. Then Zhou, you know, okay, he's bumped up a position because Bottas dropped out. But still, you know, that's solidly middle of the midfield, which for a rookie and a rookie who is classified as a pay driver in many people's eyes, that's respectable. And I think what we've seen what you can do with the Alfa Romeo car this year, he's not as good as Valtteri Bottas at the moment. He possibly might never be that sort of level driver, but still, you know, he's doing a respectable job. 13th around the Hungara Ring is, you know, that's solid. We didn't see anything happen. We saw other drivers spinning off and having collisions. Didn't see Guan Yu Zhou today, which in some respects is that's good, because if you go unnoticed, it's, you know, not necessarily outside, out of mind, but, you know, there's no news is good news sort of thing.
Yeah, and I suppose your how you rate Zhou Guanyu is very much linked to how you rate Valtteri Bottas as a driver as well. If you're not a Bottas fan, then you're not really a Zhou fan, given how far Bottas is ahead. But Mick Schumacher next up then, and he's beaten his teammate today, Phil, but it's still a disappointing day overall. Not really ever in the fight for points, where Haas did look like a solid Q3 car at the start of the season. Big upgrade to that Haas car. So is it just a case of them trying to figure out that car, or is it disappointing all round?
Yeah, that's the one upgrade they've been talking about. It's been out there. This is the one upgrade that they're trying to do for the year. It's been on Kevin's side of the garage, and it hasn't really worked. I think Mick's run there a few races ago to get those points was key in regards to their battle for constructors. It's an unfortunate race weekend for them, not really having anything go on today and even yesterday. They both made Q2 13th and 15th, and then finish, you know, 14th and 16th. That's mainly because, of course, Vettel got through there and Gasly. So not sure. I mean, that's when you're losing spots at a track where it's very hard to pass. It's partly to do with the strategy. It's partly to do with pace. I think the curiosity is, what will they have in that three races in a row once they come back from the break? There's only 9 races to go in the season. They're trying to R&D what that's going to be looking towards 2023. I would say that both Mick and Kevin will be back next year. So it's really about, I think they're in between. They're trying to figure out how far they can go up the constructors' ladder. I don't think there really is much that can happen for them in that sense. But, you know, today's race was kind of a throwaway. I think they're just trying to maintain and stay ahead of AlphaTauri and Haas. AlphaTauri and Aston Martin, because that would be huge money for them. A smaller team, I mean, albeit they might be in the running to get Kyle Busch in NASCAR and pay him a big contract. So Gene Haas does have a lot of money. But you know, in regards to Formula One's sake, they're too far behind Alfa Romeo. Alfa Romeo is about a step above them, even though the one, and then there's the other elephant in the room, which is a Ferrari power unit, which always seems to play a part, especially with the Sauber side, the Alfa Sauber side, having a lot more issues. But even Haas has had those issues too. So something to look into. Today was a throwaway, unfortunate weekend for them. But we will see what they bring to the table at three circuits that I think would be a little bit more well-suited to the Haas in Spa and especially Monza. They're known for more higher speed car anyway. And then Zandvoort, which is kind of a balanced track. We'll see what the new upgrades look there.
Oh, I completely forgot Zandvoort was even on the calendar. that's going to be a hell of an atmosphere with Max returning as the world champion. And
might laugh the field.
Yeah, maybe at this rate. Certainly the Ferraris anyway. But going back to that amazing double overtake, Daniel Ricciardo, I make no apologies for going back to it again, Tom. And it was just phenomenal. But to go from that point there and then to end up 15th place, way out of the points, and only a 5-second penalty, because he didn't really lose a lot of time with that collision with Stroll, but only a 5-second penalty, the only thing that's hampered him there. 15th place, is that down to him, or was it just bad luck?
I mean, he has to take some of the blame for it, because he exited the pits on cold, hard tyres, and he just had zero grip, and he brakes. We saw he just went very deep, and then... then he almost locked up, and you know, obviously hit Stroll. So you know, so that sets him back anyway. The 5-second time penalty didn't help, but he's got to take accountability for that. I'm going to focus more on the positives from his race, because he had a lot, and you know, I've been very, very critical of him over this season, and you know, credit where it's due. Yes, okay, his final position wasn't quite where he'd want it to be. But going back to that overtake, that was textbook Danny Ric. That was, to me, that was a bit reminiscent of his move down into turn one at Baku in 2017, when he saw two drivers in front of him having a battle, and he thought, do you know what? I fancy a piece of that pie. And then he just went in, swooped and took both of them, and then buggered off in front of them. That is the kind of thing that he sort of like made his name doing. And that's the kind of thing that he is so good at doing. So more of that, please, Danny. You had a pretty good quality yesterday, and that kind of move, that's what you're good at, and it's not like he did it around the outside of someone, you know, like Latifi and Stroll. Well, you know, okay, bad example because he hit Stroll. But you know, he did it around the outside of Alonso, for God's sake, who is, you know, one of the masters of, you know, the masters of the grid and defending. And, you know, like Aaron says, you know, last year he made his Alpine the widest thing in the universe, apart from Max's ego. And, yeah, it was a, you know, to do a move like that around the outside of someone like Alonso, when Alonso is also already mid scrap, but to keep it within the racing line, keep it within track limits, and to do it cleanly as well. That's the kind of move which he is so good at, if we just see a bit more of that, and then if he just works on the consistency side of things. Today it looked like he was perhaps a bit more at one with the car, or he was sort of getting a bit more used to the car, or at least able to understand the flaws. Like Aaron said when he was talking about Lando, he was a bit more there today, and I'm just hoping that this is a bit like Gasly. This is like the start of him sort of like beginning to gel with this year's McLaren, and that this is him sort of, you know, sort of like maybe kicking on a bit. We saw it in his second, especially his second year at Renault. He got very, very good towards the end of the season. So hopefully, you know, and we saw it last year as well. To a point, You know, so hopefully this is a bit of, much like I said about Gasly, hopefully this is a bit of a catalyst for him, where he can carry on with this sort of better run of form that he's hopefully coming into, and then he can begin to get a bit more consistent in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I definitely think this race was much more of a bad result as opposed to a bad drive. I think he's definitely shown improvements in the last few weeks, and I really want him to come good. But you know, wanting doesn't always lead to results. But let's hope second half of the season that he does come back stronger. But Kevin Magnussen next up in 16th, then Aaron, and early damage pretty much ruined his race. That meatball flag definitely taking him out of any contention for any points. First on the hards, he was the clue to everyone that hard tyres weren't going to work, but so many drivers went for it anyway, and just a bit confusing, really. But how do you put Magnussen's performance down today?
I love that you used the phrase meatball flag. I feel like you've got that from Spanners at Missed Apex.
It's been around for years, that saying.
I'd never heard of it until he started using it. Like, what is this? Anyway, it was unfortunate that he picked up that damage. I think it was with Ricciardo at turn one. So I can't remember quite where he was. He might have been hovering around the top 10. So maybe a point or two would have been on offer for Haas there had he not had that request to come in and change the wing. But there, I think at that situation, the hard tyre, going with the hard tyre was probably the right thing to do, because if it works, you can go really long and then you can stick on the mediums. But by that point, you've got nothing to lose because you're already at the back, your race is already compromised. So he did the best he could on that hard set of tyres. And in the end, he's come home 16th. But that's not really down to the fact that the tyre strategy was maybe misguided. But they weren't to know how poor the hard tyre was at that point. It's more to do with the fact that his race was compromised with the damage to the front wing, and he had to come in. Apart from that, a good solid weekend for K-Mag, because he qualified solidly in the midfield. He admitted that the car didn't really suit the track, but he said the upgrades felt good. I mean, if it's likened to a Ferrari, then it's probably going to go pretty well. Let's just see if they can operate it a bit better in terms of strategy. That would really show Ferrari up if a Ferrari sort of B car was showing them up. But yeah, I mean, not a fruitful weekend in terms of points or finishing position for Kevin, but he'll see the bigger picture in the fact that the data gathered is really important. It's a good track for assessing how well your car can go. It's got lots of medium speed and low speed corners, a sensibly-ish long straight. So, you know, we'll see how Haas crunch the numbers and come back fighting in a spot.
Yeah, and finishing just behind Kevin Magnussen, Alex Albon, the first of the two Williams, well clear of his teammate in a much lauded update, Phil, but it just doesn't seem to be working for Williams, does it? I mean, they were saying this is the best part of a second a lap quicker, yet they're still qualifying right at the back. The races aren't getting any better. Am I being harsh on Williams here, or am I just very, you know, right to be disappointed in what they've put forward this year?
I think you hold them to the standard that they built for so many years in their heyday of the 80s and 90s and even in the 2000s, when they were still a contending team, or even 8 years ago or thereabouts when they had the Mercedes engine and which sponsor, and they had Bottas and Massa. Yeah, the Martini car. And they were actually, thanks, Tom, and they were able to actually up there, but it's gone away, and unfortunately somebody has to be the back end of the field, and in this sense the Williams team has become that. Now, in the sense of what Alex Albon's doing, I mean, there were some good performances there earlier in the season. He stole 3 points. As it stands right now, that's probably all they're going to get. Cup last year was with what George did there in the summer, late in the summer, middle of the summer last year, pre and post break, was what moved them up the points table and gave them that money that should have been able to maybe give them a chance with this car. Maybe they're I guess it works out that whatever their idea was with this rules package did not work. And when you are a much smaller team relative to, say, a Mercedes who missed the boat in a lot of ways, you're not going to be able to recover as quickly. Now, to be fair, they didn't have a lot of pace to begin with. I think Mercedes had pace at testing, but it was kind of a cover up for other issues. And then Williams doesn't have it. Albon is locked in. He's going to have a ride next year. The person that's going to be talked about next most likely isn't. Very nice guy, but he won't. And who will be in that seat is somebody to look at. That's another piece of the puzzle for the silly season for next year. Now, do you want to go and sit in a car for 3 years and 2 or 3 years and not really go anywhere? You can ask George Russell. We'll see what he feels now that he's in a somewhat competitive car. And I say somewhat, but he's been able to maximize that car more until about the last five races than his much more heralded teammate. It tells you maybe it can be good to drive in a piece of crap if you drive in it for long enough. So we'll see who gets that honor here next year.
Yeah, okay. And next up then we have Nicholas Latifi. In practice three, Gotifi was the top of the pile, Tom. And how disappointed will he be to not be able to convert that into a win today?
Oh, you were so close. You were so close. Yeah, it just slipped from within his grasp. And then, he almost had it. And then he aimed at finishing P20. He's 19th, isn't he? Because Bottas didn't have to. I presume to see if he was last.
He was 18th.
He has
on
help.
Track.
He's actually, he was 18th on track.
Oh, shoot me. there is a God. I apologize. I presumed, wrongly, that he was absolute plum last. I didn't see anything of him in the race, much like we said sort of about these sort of drivers at the moment. Didn't see anything of him. I don't know what strategy he was on. He could have been driving an FW14B for all I know, and I didn't notice. He was there. He took part. He started. He competed, but compete is a strong word. He finished, and he is now probably in the hotel. Having dinner. I have nothing else to add.
That's fair enough. I think you did well to talk about Latifi for that long, to be honest. Yeah. The only driver finishing behind him was the recently coined Spinoda. Last driver on track. Spin, the only real highlight for his race, Aaron. Did you see anything else that's worth talking about from Yuki this weekend?
No. The thing that fascinated me about his spin was he spun right in front of Lewis Hamilton, and he spun in such a way that he completely got out of the way of Hamilton, and Hamilton lost no time in the middle sector on that lap. So, yeah, that was very, very helpful of Yuki to just spin out of Lewis Hamilton's way to be lapped. It was a difficult weekend for him because he didn't get out of Q1 and then a difficult race. He was on soft tires like lap 32 or something when he spun, which was just a weird strategy from Alfa. Maybe it's an Italian thing, this whole strategy shambles thing. Not sure. Let's dive into that a bit more at a later date. But yeah, again, we can't really say too much about these sort of midfield drivers because we didn't see much of them on the TV. There wasn't much happening. I say there wasn't much happening around them. There was just a lot more happening at the front of the field. And without being in the paddock to go and directly speak to them, can't necessarily find out how their day was. Yuki will be disappointed that he's made a mistake and then dropped right down to finishing last. So he's having a bit of a a drop in form at the moment for me, Yuki Tsunoda. It's just he started the season fairly well, and now it's just getting away from him. He's not helped by the fact that the AlphaTauri this year is not as strong as it was last year. He'll have to pick it up again after the summer break.
Yeah, if you'd have said to him he'll be sitting 5 points behind Pierre Gasly in the championship at the summer break, he'd have thought, wow, fantastic, I'm like P8 or something in the championship. But I think the fact that the AlphaTauri team is just so off the pace this year, it hasn't really helped Tsunoda's cause. He has definitely been better, but when you're fighting for 13th and 14th instead of 5th and 6th, then it doesn't really give you the points all you deserve. And it's the same for both drivers, to be honest. I think it's just been one of those seasons where you can't really judge the drivers on this season. So Tsunoda may mercifully get another season to try and prove himself. I don't think Red Bull have got anyone else baked in ready to throw into that car. There's a few people who got a shout, but I don't think there'd be any better than him unless they were going to recall Alex Albon back into the fold, which is a possibility, I suppose. But moving on to the final classified driver then, you Phil, is Valtteri Bottas, retired just a few laps from the end of the race. At least it kind of spiced up the end of the race there, with just a little bit of rain falling, delaying the finish of the race because they were going slower, and just meant that Hamilton was able to eat into that lead. And you know, there was a possibility there may have been a spin in those conditions, and so that's kind of really the best thing he could do for the weekend, was just spice up those last few laps.
Yeah, it's unfortunate there for Porridge. He had it's one of his better racetracks over his career. And you look at what they did yesterday. I mean, just wanted to go back there just to confirm. I mean, he was in eighth, so he made Q3. Had been on a run of races where he hadn't made Q3, which broke that long streak that he had. But the power unit issues rise again. Pit strategy also didn't work out so well because he had fallen out tires, and he fell out of the top 10. That would have made been a recovery in that sense to go and get some points out of the weekend, but just a lost weekend for Bottas there, unfortunately. But to be fair, what he's brought to that organization and also to Zhou as a rookie teammate has been a lot of positive energy for a team that hasn't really had it for a long time, for a team that's really went down the hill over the past few years, and they were only ninth in the constructors last year. This year they're actually have a chance to finish. They're in a great chance to finish sixth, and considering where they were last year at this time with their car, I think they would have taken that. If they can get the reliability situation sewed up a little bit, both drivers have shown at times in single lap pace. Even Bottas has really shown well in qualifying, which used to be his bugaboo at Mercedes. And along with starts, he's doing all right with his qualifying and he's doing all right with his starts. So I guess he just needed a change of scenery there. I'm unfortunate today. If it had happened maybe a couple laps earlier and then the rain had actually come in, I think it might have made it a little more interesting than even what it came to, but it was a lap to go. So unfortunate for Valtteri. He gets to go off with his partner and go off to swim butt naked in rivers or wherever, and wherever the heck he wants to do, and get made into a meme again. So bless him and all of his base, and we'll see him all at Spa next month.
Yeah, I think maybe if that had happened four or five laps earlier, we may have seen a competition safety car thrown. But given it was happening so late, you know, they're so intent on finishing with the racing laps, clearly, as we saw last year. So, unfortunate timing, definitely, but in the end didn't really make any difference. So that just leads us now to talk about our drivers of the day. I'm going to come to you first, Tom. Who have you got as your driver of the day and why?
You know where this is going. I am going to say Max. Because he came from P10 to P1, he overtook Leclerc twice. Granted, he made the work for himself to have to overtake Leclerc twice, but I really thought today that Ferrari were going to, it was good, they were going to sort of close the gap, and Max just said, "Nah, fam, not on my watch." And yeah, just had a really, really good race. I didn't even think he got on the podium, let alone win. So yeah, you know, for me, it's hard to say otherwise. But I do also want to say running a very close second is Hamilton.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think I'm not going to do mine, but I do agree that Verstappen is definitely a very strong shout for driver of the day. Aaron, your choice for driver of the day?
I don't think you can look much further than Max Verstappen. Yes, he had one of the fastest cars on the track this weekend. I mean, the Charles Leclerc Ferrari combination was as fast, but it was severely mismanaged from the pit wall. Yeah, I think Max is probably the driver of the day. No one else did a better job. He won the race from 10th on the grid. Can't say fairer than that, can you?
No, fair enough. I think it's pretty strong around. But Phil, any differing opinions on Max Verstappen?
Sadly, no. But, you know, you got to give him credit. I think, you know, we were talking about Williams and, you know, Nigel Mansell locked up his world championship here in 1992, 30 years ago. And I think Max Verstappen today won the world championship. The combination of starting 10th, it reminds me of his performance in Russia last year and the call that they made late to get him on the rain tires, where he was running in no man's land in 6th or 7th and had damage. They go and pit him. And by the end of that race, he finished 2nd. And we look at the points difference at the end of the year, and I think that was part to do with that. I mean, we can go over any number of other instances last year, but in this case, 10th to 1st at a track. I mean, Jensen Button started 16th in 2006 to win his first race, but 10th to 1st on that racetrack, having to battle Leclerc, they're able to drive around each other perfectly fine. I find that interesting, but what he did today and what Red Bull did today was basically just say, yeah, it's over. And so good power to him. He's going to win this world championship. It's just a case of by how much and when he's going to lock it up. That's really what it is. You're 3 races ahead with 9 to go. And it's just a case of how many more he's going to win at this point. So good on him. He's going to win this world championship. He keeps on adding to it. He's probably going to pass. I think the next thing we have to look at is Fernando Alonso in 32 Formula One wins. He needs to win, 4 more? So that's the next thing he has to break. I think the over 30 Grand Prix wins is a big milestone. I mean, now he's passed Sir Jackie Stewart and all those guys, and Jim Clark. So that's the next milestone he has to hit.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen, and probably will happen this season as well. That's going to annoy Fernando. Definitely going to annoy Fernando. So that's it for the show. So I'll just give you guys your opportunity to plug your social handles and your other projects. So Tom, tell us about Everything F1, and where can people find out more about you?
So I'm part of Everything F1. Find us across all your favorite social media platforms: so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. What's the other one? The kids use TikTok.
Twitch, maybe?
No. We don't have a Twitch channel. Oh, okay. TikTok, because apparently that's a thing. Not that I would know, to be honest. So there we go. That's why I don't do it. The handle for that is at Join the F1 or Everything F1. So just you'll find it. We have our website, everythingf1.com. with race articles, quality articles, opinion pieces, that covers F1, F2, F3, W Series, Formula E, and IndyCar. We have a YouTube channel, which we're working on, Everything F1, shock. And last but by no means least, we have the Everything F1 podcast, which again, preview, general natterings, during the off-season, during mid-season break. Goes out every Wednesday or Thursday, and we have some good guests on as well fairly regularly. I believe we may well be having Johan Deruvela coming on this week.
Nice. And Aaron, tell us more about Five Red Lights.
So the Five Red Lights is an F1 podcast, which I host. You can find it everywhere that does a podcast. You can find it on YouTube. Find me on Twitter at 5_red_lights, on Instagram, 5redlights. And my website is 5redlights.wixsite.com/5RLpodblog. I also write the race and qualifying reports for F1 Chronicle, and I contribute to InsideF2.com.
Excellent. And Phil, finally, with the Grip Strip Pod.
Unmute myself there. I have to remember that. We're at Grip Strip Pod on all socials, Twitter. We're on YouTube. We post our videos there, are of the live shows there. We talk about all things motorsports, essentially, as long as it goes fast and I can remember to put it on the outline. We talk about it on the Grip Strip Podcast. We talk about, you know, Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to go and listen to that, get a little bit of everything, long form podcast, nice listen during the day. If you're at work and you're bored and you just want to go and relax, listen to the Grip Strip Podcast. You'll get a good a dose of that from both myself and my co-host Josh Afine. I'll be calling in one of my friends, Joe, this week to go and sub for Josh since he's on vacation. You can follow us at Grip Strip Pod. You can follow me at Philip G. Matthew, and you can find the Grip Strip Pod basically anywhere podcasts are posted. So thanks again to the Toms and Aaron, everybody. Great work. Love being on the Grid Talk. Always a very passionate group, and always nice to go and sneak in little jokes here and there. It's part of what makes this a great time.
Yeah, and Grid Talk loves having you as well, Phil. So if you want to hear more from Formula One Grid Talk, we have a huge back catalogue of shows you can go back to listen to. All our race shows go out live on YouTube straight after the event, and our audio version is out slightly later, which is available on Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, OmniStudio, and Pocket Casts. We also run a Patreon, so if you want to help us continue doing what we're doing, please consider donating to us, and everything goes back into the show so we can improve your experience. You can also support us by buying merchandise from f1chronicle.com/store. And so maybe the summer break coming up, but F1 Chronicle has got a plethora of content lined up for you to keep you entertained over the next 3 weeks. We have a tech special. We have our traditional mid-season driver ratings and the odd guest or two coming on as well. So we're going to just do our post show now. So for the audio listeners, we'll see you soon and goodbye.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.